All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is November 12th, 2025. And our top story this morning is the subprime auto market. Subprime. Oh, that brings back shades of 2008, 2009. What's the worst thing that could happen? Well, a lot of people aren't paying their bills. A lot of people that probably we never should have lent to begin with. And, you know, I can't help. I got to start by giving a shout out to my friend Laksh Ganapathy over at Unicus Research, who for many moons now has been digging into this subject, warning people about the rising delinquency, about all the shenanigans that the lenders are playing to try to hide these delinquencies and these defaults and extend and pretend on car loans going out ridiculous numbers of months. Well, we got a note from Fitch yesterday. It's making the rounds today. 6.65% of subprime borrowers are now 60 days late or more on their car loans. That is the worst ever in data that goes all the way back to 1994. It may be the worst since before that. It's just we've only been measuring this since 1994. Worse than 2009. Worse than cash for clunkers. Understand that. Maybe we're not seeing the big surge of delinquencies in houses. Maybe we're not seeing the foreclosures yet like we saw in 2008. But as far as the auto market is concerned, it is worse than the GFC. And the GFC was pretty bad. You probably remember that. Some other pretty striking statistics in this Fitch note, 28% of trade-ins on vehicles now involve negative equity, where you have to pay them to take the car back. That's fun. What else do we have? The average car price is now in excess of $50,000. The average car price, higher than 50 grand. What the hell are we doing? How about we make a simple vehicle, guys? I don't mind rolling down the windows. I really don't. Okay, it's a drag sometimes, but who cares? 50 grand for a car? Just too much. What else do we have here? Interest rates. Some of the interest rates that subprime borrowers are getting, like the deep subprime guys, these are sharecropper rates. It's absolutely predatory, both by the lender who is charging a rate that is obscene and from the borrower who, based on their credit history, has clearly no intention of ever paying it back. This is just a mess that's going on in the auto market. And look, do we need to run through the names? Do we need to say Tricolor? Do we need to say Primaland? Do we need to say First Brands? What's the other one? First Help? Do we need to talk about all these names that are having trouble? Was Bayside Credit stop making loans? All these subprime lenders are in trouble here. CarMax, the ridiculous report that they had warning about profits. They fired their CEO. And all the while, Carvana's just humming along like, our business is great. Okay, one of these things is not like the others. What's the odds? Maybe Carvana's really that good at what they do, or just maybe that company's full of shit. I guess we're going to find out sooner or later. Also going on this morning, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was giving an interview this morning, and he floated the idea of $2,000 tariff rebates. I think he meant to say stimmies, because that's what it is, helicopter money. We're going to borrow or print and borrow money and just give it to everybody, blah, into the economy. And then we'll be like, wow, they're spending it and prices are going up. I can't believe that's happening again, like it's happened every time they've ever done it. But there's slightly more nuance to what Bessent is saying this morning versus what President Trump floated earlier. Again, this is just an idea. This hasn't been settled or anything. They probably need Congress to get this done. But they're floating $2,000 tariff rebate checks for people making less than $100,000. No clarity. Is that combined household income? Is that individuals? Is that gross income? Is it net? We didn't get any color like that, just the $100,000 number. Bessent also floated the idea of tariffs coming down on things like coffee, bananas, and other food items. Look, guys, we're heading into a recession. Look at that earlier story about the car. Look at what people are saying about the job market. I mean, we don't have a lot of clarity in the job market right now, but it's obviously not strong. We are headed into a recession, or if you subscribe to my train of thought, we've been in a recession since 2022, and we're just now willing to admit this to ourselves. All these are actions that governments take during a recession. Speaking of the job market, I'll be talking to Amanda Goodall later this afternoon. That is the job chick on Twitter. You may know her. She's got her finger on the pulse of the job market. So we're going to talk about all the things that we can't see going on behind the scenes there. Look for that one later today. We've got the House is voting to end the government shutdown at 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight. We've got that one. It looks set to pass. I guess we're going to find out what happened to the economy once everything opens back up. We got earnings from Oklo last night also. And by I say we got earnings, it means there ain't none. You ain't got no earnings, Lieutenant Dan. Yeah, no earnings, no revenue, no product. But what they do have is an operating loss that tripled to $36 million from $12 million just a year ago. But you'll be relieved to know they did find room in the budget for $9.1 million of stock-based compensation for their executives. All the promises being made about nuclear power in the AI bubble, they're not going to go anywhere. And look, we've got an article in Bloomberg this morning to that effect, basically saying exactly what I said yesterday in my interview with Jesse Day and Melody Wright over at the VRIC channel, which I believe Jesse said he'll be airing that one today. I'll share it on my channel when I see it. But I mentioned, look, we've got some old nuclear plants that were shut down early. We can restart those. Maybe we've got some halfway finished plants down in the southeast that we could complete. But after that, that's it. That's all the nuclear that's coming, probably for another 10 years. These promises that are being made about small modular reactors and we're just going to pop them up everywhere. Let's get one built and then we can talk about hundreds and thousands. Let's overcome that hurdle of one first. Silly rabbit. Also, we got UBS is shutting down some hedge funds that took a whole bunch of losses from First Brands. Is this a good time to remind everybody just how contained and isolated the whole First Brands thing was now that we've got hedge funds dropping dead from the contagion risk? Remind me again that this is contained? Or, you ready for this? You ready for this crazy idea? It's not contained. I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. Anyways, moving on from that one, we've got CoreWeave CEO absolutely lied through his teeth yesterday. Michael Intrator is so unbelievably full of shit. Even Jim Cramer called him out for it in an interview yesterday. I kid you not. When Jim Cramer is calling you out for being full of it, you got problems. Whoever is out there telling CoreWeave CEO Michael Intrator to keep talking to the press, remind me to buy that guy a beer because I am just freaking loving it. All the things he said yesterday, oh, it's just one data center. That's why our earnings were so bad, and that's why we cut our CapEx guidance and cut our revenue guidance, because we're only having problem with one data center. Nope. It's one data center consultant, one data center contractor that's building almost a dozen data centers for you, a formerly bankrupt Bitcoin miner named Core Scientific who doesn't know how to build high-performance compute data centers. Oh, that's just a subtle detail they forgot to mention when they were hyping up that merger, which fell through, by the way. Once again, shout out to Ed Zitron, who called this months ago in his blog post at Where's Your Ed At. But when Jim Cramer calls you out for being a liar, you got problems, dude. We've got Russia is selling yuan-denominated bonds. That is interesting. A new way to pay for their war, selling bonds lent to the Chinese who are buying their oil. We've got China is using phantom loans to artificially inflate their lending statistics. That's kind of interesting. It's the net result of handing down government directives to people who are notoriously unreliable, dishonest, whatever you want to, corrupt, crooked. How do you want to say it? The Chinese banking system's a mess. The Houthis have said they're going to stop shooting at the boats. That's nice. All right. A little bit of positivity in the morning. Never hurt anybody. We'll believe it when we see it. Don't expect a rush of ships back into the Red Sea. But hey, that's encouraging. The whole point of a ceasefire is that you cease the fire. Maybe we'll actually get that. And also, private companies are being taken over by lenders at a rather striking rate. We've already doubled the total of companies that have been taken over by lenders this year versus where they were in 2024. And the year ain't over yet. Another warning for private equity and those alternative assets that are being dumped into our 401ks and IRAs and pension plans. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance, shall we? Hey, don't forget that like button. Hit that subscribe button right next to it too, so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is modestly positive by 23 points, about a third of a percent higher. We've got the Dow is up by 144 points, also about 0.3% higher. And the NASDAQ is higher, leading the way by about 0.6%, 150 points to the upside for the NASDAQ, doing a little bit better than we did the last few days here. The U.S. dollar is now a little bit stronger, 99.67, up 19 basis points this morning. Interesting thing to keep an eye on with the dollar. Take a look here at the USD JPY chart. This is the value of the Japanese yen relative to the US dollar, or I should say the number of yen it takes to make $1. When you see this chart going up, that's the Japanese currency weakening. When you see this dollar going down, that's the Japanese currency strengthening. And right now, the Japanese currency has been weakening pretty much for the last 6 months or so. We're back up here to 155-ish yen to the dollar. Guys, this is the yen carry trade being put back on. People are borrowing yen, changing them over to dollars, and buying risk assets with them. Oh, what's the worst thing that could happen? As we have an AI bubble and a crypto bubble look set to go off at the same time, we've got a private equity bubble imploding and a private credit bubble. What other bubbles? Commercial real estate bubbles? I don't know. There's a lot of bubbles. All right. Someone's blowing a lot of them. But remember, guys, we had that meltdown in the summer of August of 2024, that big panic over the unwind of the yen carry trade. That was a pretty hectic day for stocks, and it looks like we're reloading the chamber there. So keep an eye on that one. I'm sure that's keeping Michael Guyette busy over at his channel. Looking over at the bond market this morning, we've got yields are mostly lower after the bond market was closed yesterday, but only by a little bit here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.677. That's lower by 2.5 basis points. The 10-year's at 4.077. That's actually higher by a fraction of a point. The two-year, 3.564%. That's lower by almost 3 basis points. And the one-month is at 3.945, off by a half a point. Not a lot happening in bonds today. And looking over at the commodities board, the metals are looking good once again. This rally in metals the last few days, it's been very quiet versus the rally that we had a few weeks ago. You know, that August, September, October rally. Maybe once we take out the prior highs, people will start getting excited about this. But this is a quiet riot, if you will, happening in gold. Spot gold, 41.35, higher by another $8.50 or 0.2% this morning. December gold futures are at 41.41. That's higher by 25, almost $26 or 0.63% higher. My favorite of the shiny silver. We've got spot at 51.83 for silver, higher by another 61 cents or 1.18% to the upside, threatening that 52 level already. Meanwhile, December front month contracts on the COMEX are at 51.75. That's higher by a dollar, almost 2% up here. We still have the London price trading a little bit more than the New York price. We're looking at about 7 cents here. That was as high as 12 cents this morning, but still a little bit of dysfunction in the silver market, despite all that extra metal that went from Shanghai and New York into London to alleviate the shortage. We're still seeing that little bit of backwardation with the spot price being higher than the front month contract, indicating there's still some supply stress in the market, albeit a far cry from where we were just a few weeks ago. Hey, either way, I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, higher by 1.35%. Platinum and palladium are both lower by a fraction of a percent this morning. And WTI crude oil is trading at $59.71 for December contracts. That's off by about $1.33 or 2.2% lower this morning. Bitcoin is looking all right here, 104,893, a little bit higher than this time yesterday, but still kind of in that 98 to 106 range we've been trading at for the last week and a half or so. And let's talk about the big one this morning, shall we? Car loan delinquencies hit record for riskiest borrowers. 2009 called and it wants its headline back. Americans are struggling to afford their monthly auto payments, the latest sign of pain for lower income borrowers. Reminder, guys, inflation, it hurts the lowest income demographics the worst. More Americans than ever are falling behind on their car payments. The share of subprime borrowers at least 60 days past due on their auto loans rose to 6.65% in October, the highest in data going back to 1994, according to Fitch Ratings. With ongoing inflation pressures and the return of student loan bills, millions of car owners are struggling to afford their monthly payments. It's the latest sign of weakness in the U.S. economy as the Federal Reserve considers the path of future rate cuts. These cracks in consumer health came into stark view in September when Tricolor Holdings, a used car dealer and subprime auto lender, suddenly declared bankruptcy. That's since forced a reckoning among major financial institutions that have exposure to subprime borrowers. Here is a chart showing subprime borrowers that are now delinquent on their loans. This is 60-day delinquencies, missed two payments now. 6.65%. And again, this is only going back to 2019, but this data goes back to 2000 or goes all the way back to 1994. It has never been this high, not even in 2009. Scrolling past some of these anecdotes here, they're saying hard to catch up. Consumers have also been dealing with high car prices and borrowing costs, leading a growing share to owe more on their loans than their vehicles are worth. In the third quarter, more than 28% of trade-ins toward new car purchases carried negative equity, the highest level since the first quarter of 2021, according to Edmunds.com. At the same time, average prices for a new car recently topped $50,000 for the first time. For many of the riskiest borrowers, high interest rates are adding to their financial burdens. Data from Experian showed that the average rate for deep subprime consumers, which the firm defines as those with a credit score between 300 and 500, was about 16% for a new car loan and 21.6% for a used car loan in the second quarter. Holy shit, 21.6% interest for a used car loan. Those are sharecropper rates, guys. Now, look, that I was talking about this with Mish. This is 100% predatory, right? To charge 21.6% for a car loan, you're a shark if you're doing that. But at the same time, if you're accepting a loan like that and you've got a 300 to a 500 credit score, you probably have no intention of ever paying that loan back to begin with. So who's the predator in this equation? The deadbeat taking the loan, they know they're not going to pay back, or the shark that's making the loan, raking the guy over the coals because he's poor? Maybe they both suck. Maybe they both deserve to lose in this situation. I don't know. But either way here, guys, this sucks. I mean, look at these numbers, and I have to wonder, how long will the auto, will the ABS market, the asset-backed securities market, how much longer will it be willing to buy these loans in the form of securities? And then these companies like Carvana that are totally dependent on securitizing these loans and selling them to unsuspecting investors who don't realize what's inside them, how much longer will they be able to survive? Again, supposedly everything at Carvana is great, and you know, just ask the Garcias. I don't know, man. CarMax says otherwise. Tricolor says otherwise. And now Fitch says otherwise. Meanwhile, just moments before we went live, we got this one from the Kobayashi letter. Treasury Secretary Bessent announces that $2,000 stimulus checks will most likely be going to all Americans who make less than $100,000 a year. Now, just a reminder, guys, the government cannot give you money. The government can only take it from somebody else. And in this case, the government is going to borrow money and from the bond market, and the Federal Reserve will almost certainly end up printing that money in order to stabilize the bond market when everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And therefore, this money is being paid by future inflation, which means your cost of living is going to go up again. So they're not giving you anything if they give you a stimulus. I tried explaining this to people back in 2020 and 2021 when they were doing the same stupid things. And people didn't get it until 2022, and life started getting more expensive. Oh, that's right. When Jack was sucking the air out of parties, he was actually right about prices going sharply higher because of all the money we printed. Well, we're doing it again. Maybe it'll be different this time. Just maybe. Bessent also said that they're going to be lowering tariffs soon on things like coffee and bananas. Guys, the tariff thing is interesting. We haven't really seen the effect yet on the economy. We're starting to see it in these manufacturing PMIs. You talk to the purchasing managers, you talk to some of these consumer confidence survey guys, the small businesses are feeling it. They are getting clobbered by the tariffs. The consumer has not yet seen it. It hasn't shown in the consumer prices, but there's a big asterisk. Because of the government shutdown, we are now relying more and more on imputations for the consumer price index. And by the way, imputations, that's government speak for we're just kind of guessing based on what we don't know. We're imputing it. We're just kind of making it up. And so the CPI is actually much less of a measurement and much more of an educated guess than it's ever been. So maybe these higher prices from tariffs are already showing up in the CPI, and just because of the way we measure it or don't measure it, we're not seeing it. I guess we're going to find out because the shutdown is over soon. And speaking of the shutdown is over soon, House poised to end historic shutdown over Democrats' objections. Let's not spend too much time on this silly political theater, shall we? Look, they're going to vote at 7 p.m. tonight. Right now, it looks like that vote is set to pass because the right-wing conservative caucus of the Republicans appears to be on board with this bill. And as long as they stay on board, that's enough the Republicans will have enough of a thin majority to be able to get this through without any Democrat support. So it looks like it's going to pass. And then who knows what happens after that? Meanwhile, Oklo posts wider than expected Q3 loss as expenses jump. This one's kind of interesting. I've been following this company on Twitter a little bit here. Oklo reported Tuesday a wider than expected loss amid a jump in expenses. Stock fell 1% in after hours trading. I think it's up now. The nuclear technology company reported a Q3 loss of 20 cents a share, wider than the 8 cent loss per share from the same period a year earlier, missing analyst estimates for a loss of 12 cents a share. The wider loss comes as total operating expenses swelled to $36.3 million, nearly three times higher than the $12.3 million reported in the same period of the previous year. The rise in expenses was driven by escalating payroll, professional fees associated with capital market activity, you know, issuing stock and borrowing money, and a non-cash stock-based compensation expense of around $9.1 million that impacted the quarter's results. Well, the loss is tripling from a year ago. They have no revenue, no product, no earnings, but they do find room for $9.1 million of stock to pay their executives. Gotta love this one, guys. This is the most valuable pre-revenue company in history, currently sitting at a market cap of over $15.4 billion. Despite not having a product, Oklo is up 2.65% after falling 6.5% yesterday. So it's clawing back some of its pre-earnings losses here. $106.95. Meanwhile, Bloomberg is talking about this, all the money that we're going to be investing in nuclear power, all the promises being made about nuclear power. And look, I'm very pro-nuclear power, but reasonably so. Nuclear does not move quickly, and nor do you want nuclear to move quickly. When nukes try to move quickly, then bad things happen. We're notoriously careful for good reason. But billions flow to U.S. nuclear sector with payoff still years away. Washington's $80 billion investment in nuclear reactors won't yield carbon-free power anytime soon. After a generation of stagnation, interest in U.S. nuclear energy is sky high thanks to artificial intelligence, voracious energy needs. Nuclear companies are stock market darlings, and the Trump administration recently unveiled an $80 billion plus commitment to help fund new reactors. There's just one problem. Hardly anything will be ready to plug in for a decade. And even that decade number is ambitious. In theory, $80 billion can buy enough reactors to power all of Virginia's data center alley. In reality, though, traditional reactors take 10 years or more to build, while a highly anticipated wave of small modular reactors has yet to produce commercial power. That means the only plants that will go into service anytime soon are a handful of shuttered facilities that can be restarted. And guys, I swear, this is exactly what I said. We recorded it yesterday. It's probably going to run later today on with Jesse Day over at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference channel. Me and Melody were over there talking about the AI bubble and some other things. And we talked about nuclear power. They can restart Three Mile Island. They can restart Palisades. They can restart Duane Arnold. And maybe they can finish the VC Summer reactors down in South Carolina that they got about 40% finished and then abandoned the project because of cost overruns and delays. But outside of those projects, there's no new nukes that are coming. There are some experimental prototype reactors that are being built at DOD facilities, or should I say Department of War facilities, and some national labs. But these are not commercial reactors that are going to sell power. These are they're study reactors. They're prototypes. And they're experimental. We've never run them before. There has never once been a commercially operating small modular reactor in the United States. And all these companies like Oklo, who I just reported with their $15 billion valuation, they're out there promising to build hundreds of these things, saying Oklo claims they're going to have a commercially operating reactor by the end of 2027. That's 2 years from now. That's not going to happen. Not even close. I mean, that's 15 years working in this industry. What do I know? But guys, it's just not going to happen. But, you know, whatever. Make promises about AI. Good luck. These nuclear stocks, I don't know. Again, I'm not anti-nuclear, not very much not anti-nuclear. Meanwhile, UBS to liquidate O'Connor funds hit by First Brands bankruptcy. Looks like First Brands is even more contained than it was because they had it contained and it was isolated and it spread from there, which means the containment is growing. We're being optimistic about this now, I guess. UBS Group is winding down investment funds run by its hedge fund unit, O'Connor, it said on Friday, after suffering losses due to exposure to bankrupt U.S. auto parts supplier First Brands Group. The liquidation comes after UBS CFO Todd Tuckner said in October that the bank was moving ahead with O'Connor's sale to U.S. brokerage Cantor Fitzgerald. UBS has more than $500 million in exposure to First Brands across several investment funds, including those managed by O'Connor, according to U.S. court filings. And I feel obligated to point out that UBS risk people did not flag this. Remember, UBS, they're the bank that bailed out Credit Suisse, and Credit Suisse was the bank that took the biggest losses from Greensill Capital and Archegos, two companies that were committing collateral fraud. And the risk managers didn't realize that these guys were going out borrowing against the same asset at every bank in town. And they're like, oh, don't worry. We learned our lesson. We spread that risk across all the, you know, socialized the losses and bailed out the banks. UBS bought us. We're better now. Then UBS, their hedge funds go and do the same exact thing. $500 million of exposure. It's almost like when we keep bailing out the banks never learn their lesson and they keep doing the same mistakes all over again. Weird. Meanwhile, CoreWeave CEO won't say if Core Scientific caused the data center delays and both stocks plunge. CoreWeave CEO Michael Intrator, I knew this guy was a scumbag going into yesterday, but we all saw what a horrible but also bold-faced liar this guy is. Even Jim Cramer called him out for his BS yesterday after these earnings. CoreWeave shares closed down 16% on Tuesday after CEO Mike Intrator addressed delays at third-party data center developers that hit full-year guidance in its latest earnings report. Quite frankly, every single part of this quarter went exactly as we planned, except for one delay at a singular data center, Intrator told CNBC Squawk on the Street on Tuesday. That's a bold-faced lie. One delay at a singular data center. That's bullshit. He then clarified that a singular data center provider is more accurate. Why? Because Jim Cramer called him a liar live on TV. Who had that on their 2020s bingo? Some people might think it's one complex, but when I go over the numbers, we're talking about multiple places, CNBC's Jim Cramer said. And it just so happens that the places are all connected to an outfit called Core Scientific that you tried to buy. Remember Core Scientific, CoreWeave stock ripped on that merger news and all these announcements with Core Scientific. And then the merger fell apart. CoreWeave stock didn't go back down to where it was, even though it should. Cramer noted delays at complexes in Texas, Oklahoma, and North Carolina. And Trader said the companies have been working together on infrastructure for a long time and would continue to work to bring it online. He didn't directly confirm that Core Scientific is the third-party provider. CoreWeave tried to acquire Core Scientific for $9 billion earlier this year, but the shareholders voted against the deal. During CoreWeave's quarterly earnings call on Monday, JP Morgan securities analyst Mark Murphy asked if the delay was related to Core Scientific, but Intrator declined to name the company. At another point in the call, the CEO suggested that just one data center, not multiple sites, were affected. Again, he lied on the earnings call and the interview. That's twice in the same day the guy said the same lie. If only somebody had warned us 2 years ago that this company was a fraud. There was a problem at one data center that's impacting us, but there are 41 data centers in our portfolio, and Trader said, lying through his teeth. Total effing dirtbag. Nobody saw this coming. By the way, speaking of nobody saw this coming, I also want to give credit to Mr. Ed Zitron, who runs the Where's Your Ed At? And also the Better Offline podcast. Ed Zitron has also been a very vocal critic of CoreWeave for the last year or so. And all the way back in March, when this deal with Core Scientific was announced, Ed Zitron flagged this, saying something doesn't smell right here. Note the date here, March 17th, 2025, when they were talking about Core Scientific building all these data centers for CoreWeave. By the way, this is an incredibly thorough article that Ed wrote, and it is excellent. I highly recommend you follow this one. But I want to go all the way down here to this one paragraph. Here it is. Somehow, Core Scientific intends to spend $1 billion building high-performance compute infrastructure, a thing it has yet to meaningfully do. It has, as of November, broken ground on one site in Oklahoma. Somehow, they're going to deliver over a gigawatt of capacity to a company that will allegedly reimburse it at some point, somehow, with money they do not have. What the F is going on? Look, Ed Zitron was correctly flagging here that Core Scientific doesn't know how to build AI data centers, that it's just a failed Bitcoin miner that was bankrupt 3 years ago. They just came out of bankruptcy, and then right away, CoreWeave cuts a deal with them and tries to buy them. Well, it turns out Core Scientific doesn't know how to build these data centers because they're causing all kinds of delays in a torpedoed CoreWeave's quarter. So shout out to Ed Zitron. Good call, sir. CoreWeave stock is back up about 4% after falling 16% yesterday. That be a dead cat bounce, yo. Meanwhile, Core Scientific is up about 1% after falling 10% yesterday. Both stocks sold off on this news. In my opinion, guys, both companies are zeros long term. I mean, Core Scientific's fresh off of bankruptcy. Their AI bets are going to go down in flames, and then Bitcoin's headed for winter also. I just don't see any way out for either of these companies. Meanwhile, Russia to sell debut yuan bonds as war-driven deficit widens. This is interesting. Something for my BRICS guys here. I'm sure we're going to get the de-dollarization comments here. And, well, you're not wrong. That's exactly what this is. Russia plans to offer its first yuan-denominated government bonds early next month, underscoring efforts to retool its sanctions-hit economy and help cover a record fiscal shortfall this year. The finance ministry will start accepting investors' offers on December 2nd for two series of domestic fixed coupon bonds in the Chinese currency, with maturities ranging from 3 to 7 years and a coupon period of 182 days, the ministry said in a statement Wednesday. Each bond will have a face value of 10,000 yuan. The government is seeking to boost borrowing amid elevated military spending and falling oil revenue as prices for Russian crude decline and a new wave of U.S. sanctions takes effect. The budget deficit is projected to reach 5.7 trillion rubles, or $70.3 billion, or about 2.6% of gross domestic product. All right, so there's a lot to talk about here. First of all, Russia is your Saudi Arabia. China is your United States. Russia sells oil to Saudi, oil to China. China buys the oil, pays in yuan. Then Russia goes and, I don't know, lends that money right back to China, who borrows it, issuing bonds denominated in yuan. This is a lot like the petrodollar here, or they're trying to mimic the petrodollar. I don't know if it's going to work, but that's how the petrodollar started. Now, the other thing I'm pointing out here is Russia is currently engaged in a stalemate land war in Asia, which is like a notoriously destructive, expensive endeavor. And they're talking about their record deficits here. Russia's deficit, 2.6% of GDP. The United States is not currently engaged in a land war in Asia, and we're running deficits of what? 6.5% of GDP, almost 7% of GDP. So as much as like Russia's spending to fund their war and they're like, oh yeah, these record deficits, understand it's like a half, maybe even a third of the deficit we're running already. And we're not even in this stupid war, at least not directly. Kind of just goes to show you, yeah, things are bad in Russia, but they're not so good here either, are they? Meanwhile, China's banks issue phantom loans to hit targets and slow economy. What do you do when the government orders you to make more loans, but the economy is so bad that nobody wants to borrow anything because everything's going to hell in a handbasket and the buildings are collapsing and they're not worth anything? Well, you just make loans to people who don't want them and then just have them pay them back right away anyway. But for a brief time, you made the loan and you can report it to the government. That's what they're doing in China. Jerry Hu, who owns an auto parts firm in eastern China, was approached in October with a strange request. A loan officer from one of the country's biggest banks asked him to borrow 5 million yuan, or $700,000, deposit the money, and repay it next month. The bank even agreed to cover the interest. Their managers kept calling me, said Hu, whose firm, Zhejiang province near Shanghai, his firm in the Zhejiang province, pardon my pronunciation here, is a valued client because of its steady cash flow and solid profits. I didn't really need a loan, but I still agreed to help. Known as quick lend and recover, the practice is spreading as banks come under unprecedented pressure to hit government-set targets that can't be met by real demand, according to interviews with almost two dozen bankers. The loans underscore a major challenge facing policymakers as China's economy slows. They can make funds cheaper and more abundant, but they can't force people to borrow, spend, or invest. But they'll sure as hell fake it. Fake loans just passed back next month will even cover the interest. And look, this is outstanding loan growth in China. You can see it's still growth. It's still positive, but just barely. And it is falling fast. And it all started right around 2021, right as Evergrande went bankrupt. That's when this started, guys. This is the collapse of the Chinese real estate market. In a government audit report, six state-owned financial institutions were found in 2023 to have issued 516 billion yuan in loans just before key assessment periods, only to withdraw them shortly after. Some firms deposited funds with the banks prior to borrowing equivalent amounts or subsequently parked the loan proceeds back into time deposits with the same banks. They're just faking the loans, guys. Okay, we're going to give you a loan. Here's the loan. We're going to charge you whatever percent interest. And then you take the money they loaned you. You put it right into a CD at the same bank that pays you the same interest. Nothing got bought. Nothing got stimulated. No economic activity. They're just faking the numbers to appease the government bureaucrats. What a mess. Meanwhile, shipping lines will be wary about returning to the Red Sea after the Houthi ceasefire. This is pretty much the story here, guys. The Houthis have said they're going to stop shooting at the boats, and this is good news. And the world is like, we've heard this before. We'll believe it when we see it. It's encouraging. Let's hope for the best here. That being said, I certainly would not sign up to be on the first boat to sail through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Drink, by the way, Salma Cagliano from What's Going On with Shipping. It's good news. Let's take the win, shall we? No more missiles at boats, at least until next week when somebody screws up the ceasefire. All right, last but not least, I want to talk about this one here. Private companies are being taken over by lenders at a brisk pace. This private equity and private credit bubble, guys, we've talked a lot about this. Tricolor and First Brands was just the beginning, in my opinion. And, well, look at some of the numbers in this article here. Private companies are struggling to generate enough cash to manage mounting liabilities, handing management duties to their lenders in the highest numbers in at least 6 years. In the first 9 months of the year, lenders took over 45 firms, more than twice as many as the year before, according to Lincoln International. In a separate report due later Wednesday, the firm also found that debt tied to these transactions rose to nearly $25 billion over the same period, also the highest since at least 2019, as companies increased their leverage while earnings growth slowed in the most recent quarter. Private equity is getting tired of this, said Ron Kahn, the global co-head of Lincoln's Valuations and Opinions Groups, in an interview. You will probably see more sponsors throwing in the keys and saying, take it over. And look at this chart right here. Total debt involved in lender takeover transactions hits a record. Guys, this is just for the first 9 months of the year. $24.7 billion worth of companies was taken over. That's versus $9.4 billion in all of 2024. So we have already more than doubled last year, and it's only been 9 months. And hey, last year at $9.4 billion, that number was four times, almost five times, the 2023 total. You see, things are they're kind of trending up here, guys, and they're not slowing down, not even a little bit. Another metric that causes concern is the number of private credit borrowers that deferred some of their cash interest payments in a structure known as payment in kind or PIK debt, which remains relatively high, according to the report. The percentage of deals with a PIK interest component stood at 11% in the third quarter, with about half of that considered by Lincoln to be bad PIK. I don't think there's any good PIK, but I guess bad PIK is really bad. While those numbers have remained steady since the prior quarter, they're near the highest in almost 4 years. Now look, payment in kind. This is how Wall Street makes things sound good, by using these positive sounding numbers, right? Like a collateralized debt obligation. Oh, that sounds kind of nice. No, payment in kind means the people who borrowed money from us didn't pay us, but instead of reporting that as a delinquency or a default, we're just going to take the money they should have paid us and we're going to add it to the principal that they owe us. It's more debt instead of cash back. It's payment in kind. It's essentially the same thing. It's like saying, hey, I loaned money to a deadbeat and he didn't pay me back, but that's okay. I'm richer than I started. That's what they're doing, but they're calling it payment in kind. 11% of these deals are involving some form of payment in kind. Guys, there is a comeuppance due for the private equity and private credit worlds. And it's just starting. First Brands and Tricolor were not isolated events. This is just the beginning. Hey, I want to say thank you very much to Mr. Austin Feinberg. Thank you, Austin, for supporting the channel. He says, great interview with Mitch and Travis. Shout out to my bonkers friend Travis and Mitch Vexler over at Real Estate Mindset, who came on the channel yesterday to talk about 50-year mortgages and their ongoing fight for reason in property taxes. Now have Locks and Mitch and Melody together on your next collab videos. Keep up the great work, Jack. Are we doing like the Avengers of Doom, of financial doom? We're going to get Locks, Mitch, Melody, Travis, and me together all in the same room. It'll be so much economic negativity in one place that'll actually create a quantum singularity that rips a hole in the fabric of space and time, and price discovery comes spilling out into the market, correcting all this crooked fraud. I don't know, man. I should write sci-fi about this stuff. Why not? Hey, Austin, that's a great idea. Thank you for the good vibes and for supporting the channel, sir. Break My Wallet Motorsports says, auto credit is easy to get right now. Subprime can last a while if lenders can keep making loans. Also, credit is easy so dealers can move metal. Well, I appreciate the firsthand information there. And right in the middle of that comment, Break My Wallet, that's the crux of it all. If the lenders can keep making the loans, all right? The lenders can only keep making the loans if somebody will lend to the lenders. And who lends to the lenders? That's usually either the banks or the bond market. I don't think the banks right now are tripping over themselves to extend loan to subprime auto borrowers. Call me crazy. After the contained cockroaches, something tells me they're going to start being a little more careful. And of course, the ABS market, that's the big one right there. Will the bond market keep buying this crap? The more of it that goes bad, sooner or later, even the bond market will stop buying this. And seriously, like you could poop in a bag and call it AAA rated and the bond market would buy it, but only to a point. Enough people open the bag and smell what's inside. They stop buying it. I don't know when that happens. It took a long time back in 2008, 2009, but we're certainly well on our way to that one now. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsport, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman has been a melonhead for 16 months. Thank you, T.A. Chapman. He says, great Travis and Mitch video. Like and subscribe. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Yes, all that good stuff for the algo. Once again, shout out to Travis and Mitch. Check that one out in the feed, guys. Posted that one late last night. Thank you, T.A. Chapman. Chuck G says, Trump's interview with Laura Ingraham was trash. You know, I didn't see the interview, but I heard that. I've heard that from a lot of people. And I've heard that from a lot of conservative people, very conservative people. He's losing his base, guys. He's doing a lot of stuff. And look, I kind of am his base. I mean, I'm not a, I guess I kind of am party line voter, but I vote against most of the time. I didn't want to vote for Trump. I certainly wasn't going to vote for Kamina. But look at what he's doing, the helicopter money stuff. I mean, and the tariffs. I agree with the message of the tariffs and trying to rebuild manufacturing. But he went about it so haphazardly, so clumsily and stupidly, made it so much worse than it really had to be. And then the on again, off again in the tacos. And now stimmy checks? What the hell? What the hell, man? You were elected to cut spending. That's what you were put there to do. Maybe you want to cut spending? Oh, no. Yeah, let's just do helicopter money. Sure. Sure. That'll speed us on our way to excellence. Yeah, Chuck, I heard the same thing from a lot of people. I guess I'm going to have to go watch that interview. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. The internal dialogue, who is externally monologuing now, says, thanks for highlighting the Sonder story yesterday. I had a reservation for Friday, and I heard from you before hearing from them. Wow. All right. So I'm faster than Sonder. I wonder how that happens. Yeah, guys, for those who didn't catch the show yesterday, Sonder was a short-term rental company. Basically, we work with hotel rooms. They buy blocks, like whole floors of hotels, for long-term, and then they rent them out individually. And they had a falling out with Marriott. I don't know what went into this falling out with Marriott, but people who were in the middle of their hotel stays who booked their rooms through Sonder were being called by the hotel saying, get out by tomorrow morning. And apparently the internal dialogue was among them. So, hey, I'm glad we were able to get that news to you, hopefully in time before your life was thrown into chaos. That sucks, man, to be, you know, to have your reservation canceled like that, or mid-reservation to be just told to get out when you've already paid for your room. So thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that. Nacho Man, what's going on? He says, hey, Jack, nice video yesterday. Thanks. You are most welcome, Mr. Savage. I appreciate that very much. And thank you for the generosity and your continued support of the channel. Glad you guys enjoyed that interview yesterday. Armando Reyes says, the system cannot be fixed. The pop is inevitable. Bring on the next depression so that we can just get it over with. Well, I'm in no hurry to have a depression. You know, Go read about what life was like for the average person during the Depression. It's not something we should be yearning for. But once you've understand the underlying causes of that depression, you realize the next one is inevitable. And the longer the next one takes to get here, the worse it's going to be. And therefore, it is better to get it over with sooner. and FFS don't just try to paper it over with money printing again, which we all know they're going to do, guys. They're sure to do it, which is why I say it every day. I like the shiny. There just ain't enough of this stuff in the world for what's coming, boys. Dagnabbit, I'm going to get my hands on as much of it as I can before it happens. Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. And he is back again. He says the U.S. government is guilty of counterfeiting by way of money printing. That is correct, sir. We defaulted on our debt in 1971 when we closed the gold window. We defaulted on the Bretton Woods Agreement. Everybody's like, oh, my God, the debt ceiling. It would be crazy to default on our debt. I think we've defaulted six times on our debt one way or another. And inflation is just another form of default. If you're offering negative real yields on money loaned to the government, then you're basically not paying back a portion of the wealth you were paid, the wealth you were borrowed. Therefore, you are defaulting on your debt. We're going to default one way or another. The only question is how. Good point, Armando Reyes, sir. Appreciate the super chat, the support of the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity in the super chats. Hey, also, you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon, thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Check out that interview with Travis and Mitch from yesterday. Also, keep an eye out for the interview with Amanda Goodall later today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Till next time, live small and dream big.